This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome everyone to the When Eagles Dare review podcast, joined by Albert Curley and Samuel Hesketh, as always.
Are we not previewing it?
No, it's a review of it, because we've watched it.
Oh, I thought this was us previewing watching it, like how excited we are to see it, because that's what we normally do.
Nope, it's the review. We're switching things up a bit. I mean...
Oh,
groundbreaking to you, it would seem, but it was your idea to do this. So yeah, so we're just gonna rot through a few episodes. I think this episode here is going to cover parts 1 through 3 of the
I hope so,
because we've forced Albert to watch all 3 episodes this evening. Or you got through 2 and 3 tonight?
I got through 1, 2, and 3. I literally just finished episode 3. Yeah. I like to take my time. All this binge watching nonsense.
I was gonna save it, but then did watch 1 through 5 back to back. Couldn't turn it off.
Also rewatching Lost at the moment, so you know, I have to pick and choose carefully what I watch and when I watch it. I can't work out which one's more sort of confusing.
Will the Palace one have an actual ending, do you reckon?
Yeah, a polar bear turned up at one point. But again, I'm such a roller coaster. That could have been the Crystal Palace one.
It could have been outside the Sainsbury's. Who knows?
Well, Lost is a good way to start, I guess, because that's where Palace were as a club when the documentary gets off to a start. Part one's called Back from the Brink. Now, I've said to you pre-recording, I don't want to take the piss, but naturally when I take notes on things, I just can't help but look for the funny things. I did thoroughly enjoy this. So if at any points I'm taking the piss out, it seems like I'm taking the piss out of this documentary. I'm only doing it as a lighthearted kind of thing. But
it's all right. The guests probably ain't coming around anyway now, are they? So I say we go in.
But it starts giving off the backdrop of Crystal Palace Football Club. Albert, they go heavy on the 1861, don't they?
Very heavy.
And since then, it's all got a bit quiet. Hesketh, like we've binned off the 1861. Do you think this was the final cut was done before?
Yeah. I mean, I remember us talking about the 1861 on here, and we're all saying, like, none of us are having it. Do we actually think the club are having it, or is it just I don't think the club are having it. They've dropped it like a hot potato. Mm,
but it made it into that credit sequence. But yeah, did amuse me. So you just start with a backdrop, and then it opens the proper documentary, then opens with Steve Parish in like super slow-mo walking down the road. And
I thought it was Celebrity MasterChef.
Well, my eyes were immediately drawn to the street he was walking down, and it was called Big Street. And if you're on Twitter enough, you know that that's a social media nickname for Steve Parish. So, so that's what I mean. I don't mean to be taking the piss out of it, but it's just how my brain works.
And that wraps up episode 1. Let's quickly go on to episode 2 and 3 and get the fuck out of here.
But then obviously it goes into, starts heavy on the 2010 admin and really on the protest, the Bank Holiday Monday one, which took place at Selhurst Park Stadium, and then the following day, which took place outside Lloyd's. Either of you two make this? I don't. For me, I was working back then, and I was stuck at work. I met frantically on the Tuesday, doing everything I could, from sending out emails, getting people to sign things, and all sorts of stuff. But it's one of my biggest regrets as a Palace fan, I didn't just get up and walk out the building, to be honest. Heskiff, were you there?
I was in America at the time. I was visiting some friends in Minnesota, and I remember, like you, I really wanted to have been there. But I remember, because of the time difference, going to sleep, and I was like, I hope when I wake up, like, Palace are all right. You know, I hope I don't wake up and they say liquidated or something.
Stay out there, be a Minnesota Wild fan forever.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was a, obviously I would have been there if I was in London at the time, but it was good to see it. I mean, we've all seen those pictures and videos before, but it does sort of really bring home that it did make a difference. And when you see the people looking at the building from the bank, you know, it made a difference, and it did sort of push us a bit further towards safety.
Indeed. What about you, Albert? Anywhere near it?
I was in Leicester interviewing an Iggy Pop lookalike, but that's another story for another time.
Well, I was just pulling up your IMDb here to see if you were working on anything around then, but alas, no. This is prior to your TV working days. Forgive me. It's Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part One.
Yeah, and you have to remember that those dates on there are the release dates of the film. So yeah, I was working on a bit of synergy. I was working on my own documentary at the time.
Was it about a boy wizard?
No, it was about an Iggy Pop lookalike. Thank you very much. And I don't know if Amazon Prime are going to listen into this, you know, but there's a ready-made documentary about an Iggy Pop tribute act and other tribute acts readily available. But again, I mean, it was another story for another time, but you've made me tell it. If you're listening, Brian from Leicester, big up yourself. He's got a lust for life.
Yeah, so as you say, I massively just regret not being there that day. But you kind of got the impression from watching it back, just it struck me how young everyone was, and it kind of you could tell it was a summer holiday because a lot of kids there from being out of school and stuff. But
not old enough to have a bank account with Lloyds.
although with the outcome with Lloyds helping to support the club, ultimately, maybe everyone did join Lloyds as a result. Maybe they saw him as a good bank. So, I mean, the outcome, obviously, as we all know, is that Lloyds finally get off their ass, 3,000 fans make them do it. But it was kind of, your favourite one. It was still the BBS that kind of got them all there, wasn't it, Heskiff, with CPFC 2010 starting the old BBS account, which was very briefly mentioned in the documentary, but that was kind of a big deal for quite a few years, wasn't it? That sort of contact with the fans.
Yeah, it was. They had their own sort of thread for questions and stuff as well once they bought the club. But I remember, because I've been on the BBS for longer than I should have been on the BBS, to be honest. But I remember that account sort of turning up, and what a big deal that was, because you don't sort of get prospective owners going on message boards. It's a bit weird. And then you certainly don't get owners coming on message boards.
P. Diddy 99.
If only.
Gaddafi _ 69.
So yeah, it was glossed over a bit, but I think that sort of did tie in really well with the fan led sort of support for the club and the ownership as it was in 2010. So I thought a little bit more would have been made of that, but yeah, it was certainly a weird time when you think of where we're at now, that having the owner come on and ask questions and say, "Hey, can you give us a bit of support, please?" But just very odd.
Yeah, it's funny that seeing Sharon Lacey is in the documentary quite a lot. And before we got into the Premier League, through the blog that I used to do and through podcasts and stuff like that, we used to speak to her a lot, you know, really trying to find ways we could get money into the club. And then all of a sudden, when we're in the Premier League, CPFC 2010 on the BBS was gone. All that contact, all severed. But there you go. So then sort of focused on the consortium coming together, really heavily focusing on how they're Crystal Palace fans, so they're all from the area. But one of the owners, Albert, sort of absent from the whole thing. One of the four never showing up. Do you think that was deliberate?
He might be a bit busy at the moment, hanging out with prospective London mayor candidates / arseholes. Yeah, he wasn't there, was he? He wasn't there. I was hoping for a little word from Simon Jordan as well, but that never materialised either.
I think the little word would have begun with a C and rhymed with punt.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, when Steve Parrish talks about we got on the aeroplane to go to Newcastle, and we get to Newcastle and we were in administration, and that's basically like that's the story of it.
I thought that was Lost. I'm just getting so confused.
But there's a lot more to that story than that just one simple sentence where Parrish seems to suggest knowing nothing about the club going into administration. Wonder if all those stories will ever come out. But, you know, stuff I've heard through the grapevine is, you know, I mean, well, I don't even think it's through the grapevine. I think Simon Jordan has explicitly said that he thinks Parrish pushed us into administration. So
he has said a lot of things, yeah, Simon true. Jordan.
Yeah. Such as I own the ground.
Which, yeah, we very clearly found out, didn't we?
That got a mention as well, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely did, yeah. Was it Rock Investments owned it, then it went to HBOS, and then the financial crash put paid to them, so Lloyds bought it. So that was why we ended up, you know, in the outside Lloyds in the first place, because they bought it for 12 million and understandably probably didn't want to sell it back to us for 3 million. So, but the four come together, and that's Steve Browett, who naturally just comes across great in all the episodes. I think I love Steve Browett. Anytime you ever see him, he's always got time to talk to you, and he's just, you know, a genuine Palace fan, South London boy, and all round top geezer. Martin Long and Hoskins come together, make the deal on a handshake. Steve Parrish talks a lot about the trust that went into it, that they just basically put his name to it as all the with no money actually there. But then they get into the footballing world, and it's kind of like you start to realise the importance that Mark Bright's played in all of this. And, you know, he comes in for a lot of stick on social media for being him and Steve Parrish being together all the time and always next to him and stuff. But, Albert, you get the impression that he helped Steve a lot, particularly in the early years, not just doing stuff for free around the training ground, which by all the sounds of it was completely empty and bereft of staff for most of it, but just sort of helping him to understand the business of football.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was stuff like that, that, you know, the four guys that come in, and Parrish particularly, you know, are certainly experts in their field, and that's how they've, you know, got the money to then step up and save the football club, which, you know, a lot, to this day, everyone's like, oh, we need to move past that, you know, whatever, you know, it was 10 years ago, whatever. But, you know, you really can't take away the significance of that. And it must have been daunting, because, you know, we're all fans. I haven't got, you know, 5 million quid to chuck into a pot to buy a football club, let alone one that I love. And it must be hard going in and being, okay, you can run a business, but as Parrish mentioned several times throughout the documentary, you know, it's like no other business. And I mean, to this day, there must still be a massive part of head over heart, and, you know, what you want to see as a fan and what you need to do as an owner to kind of to make sure everything's balanced. And yeah, so when you see things like, you know, Mark Bright coming in and helping steer that, and, you know, and again Dougie at a point as well, you know, it's like it must have been valuable or invaluable for them at that time.
Mm. Mate, if you stopped building wings on your house, you might be able to afford to 5 million.
Nah, you're right.
It sort of then brushes over George Burley coming in and not lasting very long, and they kind of draw the correlation between Jason Punchin scoring a hat-trick for Millwall against us and kind of play it off as him playing an important role before he ever got to the club. But what I found amusing about it was Steve Browett reliving it and just saying, I just, in the director's box, I glanced to my left and Steve Parrish was just scribbling away and he was like, oh, I guess we're getting a new manager. And he's still like, he felt like, even though he owned the club, it kind of, you got the impression that he was like a fan that was finding out something before everyone else, and he was absolutely buzzing that he was finding it out. But then you get quite interested inside that Eddie Howe was actually in the building, which I knew we'd obviously spoke to him, but the fact that he was actually at the training ground and what's his name? Is it Scott Guyer, isn't it? Okay. Yeah, he's obviously knows Eddie Howe personally from their time at Bournemouth together. He's saying Eddie Howe pokes his head around the door and we just look at each other like, oh, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, shit, I didn't know you were here, kind of scenario. But he kind of, Parrish sort of misremembers a bit by saying, you know, I woke up the next day and he'd joined Burnley, which is not quite how it happened. If you remember that thoroughfare outside Burnley's ground, Eddie Howe came out and actually did an address to the press saying that I'm staying at Bournemouth. I've decided to stay at Bournemouth and I won't be going to Palace. And then it was about 3 weeks later was when he ended up at Burnley. But then you hear, you get a lot, Albert, from Dougie Friedman about how he went and really, really fought for the job, really, and put his case on the line why he feels like he should have the job. And ultimately, that's why he ended up getting it.
Yeah. And I think we touched on it when we spoke to Dougie. Christ, how long ago was that?
I know we 16, I think it was. Yeah.
Jesus. And again, like, got passion for the club. And I mean, there's been many ups and downs since then, but you know, and I know you get swept up in it, but you know, in the documentary, they show you the Stockport goal and, you know, he still talks passionately about the club. And again, as a, you're Steve Parrish, lifelong Palace fan, you know, we'll remember Stockport, you know, amongst the other sort of great Freeman moments. And when he comes, when a club legend's banging on your door saying, I want to, you know, give me the job, give me a chance. Again, as a fan, you want to, that's what we all really want to see, don't we? We want to see club legends do well and take the club forward. So yeah, it just brings all that home, really. You know, it must be difficult to balance that head over heart fan, owner versus fan. And Freeman coming in and making the case, you know, it was, you know, again, it bore good fruit, you know, essentially. And it is a paving slab on the pathway to where we are now. And we've come very far, but we have to tip the hat and acknowledge that several people played a good part in getting us here eventually. And again, Freeman's one of them.
Well, Steve Browett actually mentions about being starstruck the first time he meets Dougie Friedman. And it did amuse me because then the documentary showed a picture of obviously his early time in the club, and he's standing with Gareth Taylor, friend of the pod, Cole Davies will be delighted that Gareth Taylor gets a mention. But yeah, it's like, would you get starstruck by Gareth Taylor? Highly doubt it. So at this point, we've now got four Palace fans as the owners. We've got club legend Dougie Friedman at the helm. We've got Little Wilf and Little Johnny Williams coming through. I'll put it here. I mean, the pictures were just so cute. I mean, it seems, just looking back at the pictures of Johnny Williams that they were putting up, it seems astonishing that he was playing football with men, to be honest. He just looked like a 12-year-old. But
not he kept breaking.
I did have a chuckle. It took him 35 minutes to use the phrase catchment area, Hesketh. I was very amused. I was surprised it took that long, to be honest. But yeah, so then they just, you talk about just surviving the end of that season, go into 11-12, and again it's kind of brushed over here. They talk about Parr, KG and Garvin coming in, Jednak and Murray, and his first time Melee and Murray have introduced to the pod. Now, Hesketh, I don't know if it's just me, but when Melee came on with that resplendent beard and nice haircut and that very lush looking white shirt, it was tasty, weren't he? As straight men, I think we all looked at him in the same way, didn't we?
It is not just you, I can tell you that. The collective intake of breath in my household when we were watching it from both me and Vanessa talk about synergy. Obviously, we remember how great he was and how much we love him. But when you see him like that, same with Murray as well. Like when they first appear on screen, you're just like, oh, God, I love him. When Jules turns up in some back garden or whatever he is, you're just like, oh, I love Jules. Then you see Jedi. Oh, I love Jedi. Mm. It's just, yeah, it was a great, even if Jedi hadn't said anything, just striding to his seat and sitting down, that's enough, mate. That's all you need to do for now. Mate,
after 5 years of marriage, I'm glad you and Vanessa are collectively gasping together still. But one thing, Albert, that I did get is from Murray was Dougie kind of negged him into joining the club. We talked about him going to watch him at Dagenham Redbridge and tells him you weren't really that good today, but you grabbed the goal and that's what I want you to come to Palace to do. You're a bit of a non-league player still, but you can come and learn at Palace.
You're slapdash at your accountancy, but again, I'm sure Freeman talked about that in our interview. You know, he said how he kind of put him down and almost like threw the gauntlet down and was like, you know, you come here to prove yourself, and yeah, shrewd signing. But yeah, I have to say, like I'm fully on board with the Melee sentiment that you two have expressed. I feel that I might be at the back of the line. What an image. but it's only when you go back and you see like pictures and footage of Melee when he didn't have the beard. I know a beard obviously transforms someone's face, Terence. Eskif, you as well. But I've never seen someone look so completely different with and without the beard. Like I've got no flutters looking at him in the old pictures. It's like it's too complete. It's like a fine wine.
I think it might have more been Alan Lee rearranging his face up at Huddersfield.
Yeah.
And that's where the documentary moves next into the 12-13 season at the start. And introduced Peter Ramage joins the cast at this moment.
A very cagey Peter Ramage. Doesn't uncross his arms for the entire thing up to episode 3. I don't know if he loosens up in 4 and 5, but friend of the show, Peter Ramage.
Don't spoil it, mate.
Obviously not as comfortable as he is talking to this show. He looked very guarded for all of it.
Rumours has it that he's crossing his arms as he speaks to FYP right now. So
fucking turn cut.
We get introduced to Joel Ward for the first time as well. Never really realised how close he was to coming to Leeds. You know, talk about a sliding doors moment with Leeds deciding we'll get it all done in a couple of weeks, and he goes for the surety over the potential of a deal might be in there in a couple of weeks. And then it's the start of the 12-13 season where it doesn't quite get off to what we expected. Lose the first two games. Horrible defeat at Bristol City. We know all about those, Albert.
talking of car journeys back from Bristol.
So then we have the infamous car park exchange where you've got Friedman, Friedman's not there, sorry, it's Parrish, Brighty, Neil Ashton, the journalist, a couple of the other owners discussing about where things are going and how things have gone badly. And you kind of get the, Steve Parrish talks about maybe I said no too much in the summer and so on. And again, it's Mark Bright plays a massively key moment here in the history of Crystal Palace Football Club by sitting in the car with Parrish on the way home and sort of saying, you know what, I'm liking what I'm seeing. But there are some holes in the squad. And if we fill those holes, I feel like there's a good side there. And, I think it sort of made Parrish realise that, you know, it's done some self-reflecting and realise, oh, actually, maybe it's me here. So they get into a meeting, which was a tense one by all means, but
Freeman ends up coming out with, who does he come out? He comes out with four players, and he comes out with Andre Moritz. He comes out with Danny Gabaldon. Comes out with help me out with the other ones.
I was saving Balassi for last.
Yannick Balassi and Damien Delaney, which, you know, we needed a centre back. We got two with Paddy McCarthy getting injured. It was clear we needed someone a bit more creative in the middle of the park, and we needed someone to complement Zaha. And, you know, that's when we basically move into part two of the documentary now, and it's titled Dougie's Team. And Hesketh Balassi comes on the screen, and it's just immediately infectious with his smile and he's just general persona.
Yeah, it's always good to hear Yala talk. And like you said, smiling. don't know if I prefer him rapping to speaking, but I like there was a bit where he said, you know, once he heard of the interest, he said to his agent, "I don't care about finances. You get me there, and I'll prove to them, like I'll show them what I can do." Which is, you know, a great attitude to have. And coming in and getting an assist about 30 seconds into your debut is a pretty good way of sort of stepping up the scene, you know. But one thing that I did think when Dougie was basically like, you know, I knew we were, if I got these players in, we'd be able to push for promotion. And I was thinking, well, you're a better man than I, because nothing that I saw in the year before made me think we were anywhere near the promotion places.
Well, before the Sheffield Wednesday game, it was 3 wins in 23 in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, we were playing some pretty dire stuff. They had the highlight of Everson scoring a goal. I think it was against Preston or something.
Massive goal.
And I just remember I was like, how big a goal that was, because the season had been so. It was just pretty dull, wasn't it? So fair play to Dougie for having the confidence to say, if you get me these players, I can turn it around to that extent, because I never would have thought that.
Yeah.
You know, even.
No, definitely. It was a big struggle. But Balassi not caring about finances, seems like Bristol City didn't either, Albert. I think it was in total we ended up paying circa 125 grand for him.
It's mental. What a signing. Yeah, and off the back of like getting turned over by him as well, you know, like Freeman says, he goes into the office and there he said they almost felt sorry for him and knocked a bit off. It's like, well, that's more for them, you know. It was a great sign for us. And yeah, I mean, Hesketh said it, like, just watching Balassi talk about his time at Palace, it really, I mean. There's a lot of them that you watch those interviews and your sort of heart swells a little bit. And I mean the heart, not unlike you boys watching Melee. But yeah, watching Balassi talk, just the sort of the measured excitement that he talks about, and his whole face lights up, and it's, yeah, like what? And I knew it was good at the time, and I knew I certainly didn't have a lack of appreciation back then, but it's only now that you sort of look back and you think, yeah, that was, you know, when that clicked, when it was Zaha and Balassi and you know, Murray, obviously, and everyone, it was a great team. But when that clicked, you know, what a joy, you know, what an absolute joy to witness.
Yeah,
that.
I just felt like it was a shame they didn't have Balassi and Zaha in the same room as well, because I think that could have been great. Something that could happen in the future. Definitely, you could get them talking about our time at Palace together. Be brilliant. I think they did something similar with Wright and Bright a few years back. Then
on the centenary DVD. Yeah, that's right. I love it because you watch that and it's obviously filmed every few hours, and you just see every time it cuts back, Ian Wright's Guinness is like doing that, like going down, and there's just the same pint of orange juice on the table for Mark Bright.
Yeah. You just get some great funny quotes happening here now. You get Ramage talking about, like, Balassi turning up and started doing tricks and nutmegs, and Zaha's doing the same. And he's like, just talking about, I just want to kick him on two foot him. I'm sure Dougie would have been delighted if they did that. Some fantastic footage as well of it, shows Balassi's run for Gale's goal against Liverpool, but it shows it from the view of the homestead. I'd never seen that footage before. It was amazing. Yeah,
Brilliant. It was a brilliant highlight, that.
And then we get Damo introduced for the first time. And Albert, I love watching Damo speak because he's such a big, big guy, hard man, but his vulnerability is just there to be seen. And I just felt the whole way through the entire series, you see him talking about it and you get this impression of such a confident man. He's, he turns up and then they talk about 3 weeks later, he's saying, he's brought the whole team to Dougie Freeman saying we should get promoted. This team should get promoted. That's where I expect to be. But there's just such a vulnerability about him. I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's weird because there was skipping forward in documentary terms, there's the famous clip of, him and Ramage after the playoff final where he seems to be almost in distress at the fact that we've gone up. So there's always been a bit of vulnerability there. And we know we've seen him, we've seen him like lose his head in football games. And he clearly wears his heart on his sleeve. And again, the way he celebrates goals, another standout moment, where he, it was at the Medeski when he really got involved to sort of help protect Wilf, seems to be holding off four or five Reading players. He's clearly a deeply passionate guy. But again, yeah, the way he talks, he's not some strapping, he's not putting up a front or trying to put on any sort of hard man, even though he clearly is. He's not trying to put on some sort of hard man exterior. And the camera loves Damien Delaney. I don't know if you've noticed, there's like one shot.
They got that money's worth for that.
Yeah, that's about 20. That's, you could, if you cut all those shots, it's about 20 minutes of footage.
Do you know what really got me about it as well, though, is there's a bottle of Evian water in the background just there. It just ruins the shot completely. Once I noticed it, I couldn't unnotice it.
It's product placement.
that's the thing with Damo as well. It's like you say, he when he came to Palace, he was at such a low ebb. We all know that he was thinking about packing it in and going to America. And he said, I was just going to come for 3 months because that's what I was offered and that would be that. When we were watching it, Vanessa was like, it's weird to think that he went from that when he first came in to the guy who was basically mugging off Diego Costa, left, right and centre at Stamford Bridge. But the one thing that I really did like with Damo was when he talked about that game against Sheffield Wednesday that we won. And he said, when he came into the club, even though it was the day before the game, there was a really good vibe and that sort of helped make his decision. And after the game, he went into a change room and everyone was going absolutely crazy. And he said it was like we'd won the Champions League, but we'd won a game of football. And he was like, it had been ages since I won a game of football. It was ages since Palace had won a game of football. And it just everything came together and I realised what a great set of players, what a great team we had here. And that seems to carry on throughout the season, doesn't it? That sort of narrative of what a great, it might be a band of misfits, but they come together to such a good level that it pushes them through even the hard times, which we'll come on to speak about.
Yeah, so you've already said the word, Albert, clicked is what they all start saying. It comes out of about five of their mouths, I think. So it all just clicked after that Sheffield Wednesday game. And then we get into this unbelievable run, unbeaten run. KG's volley at Charlton, seeing all the players expressing their disbelief that he, I think Rambo calls it a ridiculous volley. Zaha's waxing lyrical about it as well. we come back from 2-0 down against Cardiff at Selhurst to win 3-2 with a Glenn Murray hat-trick. A few weeks later, we repeat the feat at Selhurst, come back from 2-0 down against Burnley. I think I remember at the time, excuse me if someone goes and looks this up, my stat's slightly off, but I think it was something like 40 years since we'd come back from 2-0 down at Selhurst to win a game. And then we did it twice in a couple of weeks. And it was just on both occasions in both games, we were 2-0 down and it just didn't feel like we were out of the game. It just both times it was like, we're going to come back and win this. And then, we went and got a brilliant result at Bolton. And then Albert, the Wolves away one is always one that stands out where, Damien Delaney slipped and let Ebanks Blake in to put them 1-0 up. And once again, it was just the character in the team. You know, Damo was immediately picked up and like pulled to his feet, and everyone was supporting him. And then Zaha just goes and scores those two ridiculous goals down the other end and continues to run.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. There's so many games that I've just forgotten, you know, over the years, and I'm watching back. And I remember the Sheffield Wednesday one when they were interviewing Delaney, and then it's the Sheffield Wednesday game. And instantly I remember, oh yeah, I remember this game. And because I've got an old good mate who's a Wednesday fan, and we went and yeah, I just remember like, oh yeah, the centre half that we signed like merely 24 hours ago. And he was just like class above. He was just unbelievable. And it just went on and on and on. And, you know, again, I remember having like QPR mates, like what have you done to him? Like who is it? Like he was toilet with us. Like they just couldn't believe that he would just turn into this absolute Rolls Royce of a defender. It's just brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, there's just like, and seeing Zaha again, that Wolves game, like obviously he's the same player today, but he's just a different player today. Just seeing how he looks so young, and just seeing how like raw is the wrong word, because he's not raw, because he's still trying to do the same stuff that he does now, you know, and albeit probably a tiny bit quicker. But just seeing that again, it's just so nice to see it, because there's so many moments that you sort of forget, and it's, oh yeah, well, we were quite good back then, weren't we?
Yeah. Like,
I think as well with Wilf, it's because we'd been not great for a little while beforehand, and he sort of burst on the scene and was still like a new excitement for us. And he did, and his thing was taking players on, wasn't it? That's what he was good at. And especially in the Championship, he'd, you know, get past three or four players quite easy. It was so exciting. And then Yalla coming in and doing basically the same thing on the other side. And Jules said in the documentary, he just said, you know, if you're an opposition, I wouldn't want to be an opposition player, because it's like, how are you supposed to stop them? Those two are Murray in the middle. Like, how are you supposed to put a stop to them? It's basically impossible.
Mm-hmm. And you just get, on the back of all this, you've got all the players talking about how it's the best changing room they've ever been a part of at this time. And it just seems even more ludicrous that we get to this point now that Bolton come in and, well, we all know what happens then. Dougie Freeman decides to go up north. Kind of funny, because Dougie Freeman says on the documentary, I didn't know what I had, but about 8 minutes earlier in the episode, he's saying that before he went into that meeting with Parrish to ask for four more players, he knew exactly what he had. but yeah, didn't know what he had. And, you know, Steve Parrish is there saying maybe looking back, he could have done more. And, you know, it kind of just feels like it's just a massive breakdown in communication, really. And before Parrish even, I think he refers to it as a runaway train. And it's just all over. And then, you know, fans end up saying, you know, falling on two sides. It's either Parrish's fault or it's Freeman's fault. But, you know, just watching back this, just in the context of the documentary, Albert, it just seems even more ludicrous that he left. I know living it at a time and everything felt great. And, you know, I think Parrish says it brilliantly when he says, you know, everyone wants you to succeed, Dougie. Like, you know, you've got everything here that you could want. The way they frame it in the documentary just really captures how ludicrous it was.
Yeah, and again, not up and on about it, but when we spoke to Freeman about it on the pod, it's, you know, he explains it, and and he explains it again in the documentary, and you like, yeah, it's still never really made sense. And I don't know, you know, I'm not trying to create a conspiracy. I don't know if there's something that no one's talking about, but it just seems so mad. So like, all right, he says that Bolton just come down from the Premier League. They've been in the Premier League for a while, so they probably had, they were sitting on a, you know, bigger pot of cash than we were. But it was like he built that team essentially from the ground up, you know, starting with being a, you know, assistant to Paul Hart and working with the kids. And yeah, it just still to this day, still just feels completely bizarre. And I remember at the time when it, because it kind of dragged on for a few days in the press, didn't it? And it, like, with every sort of hour that it went on, it seemed more and more inevitable it was going to happen, but still couldn't believe it. I remember being like, well, if you can't expect a club legend to stick around when you're like challenging at the top of the league, like what can you have in football? And I remember being so despondent. Yeah, so like seeing them go through that again, yeah, it kind of brought back old scars.
I remember at the time I was working as a temp at a university and basically didn't want to do any work because I just wanted to like chat to my mates and see what was going on with Freeman. I suppose Twitter wasn't quite as prevalent as it is now.
Refreshing so news now.
Yeah, news now, F5 in the BBS. But it's like, I also really want to do well here so they give me a permanent job so I'm not a temp working off hourly rates. And I was talking to my mate, Dan Cooper, and he could not believe, like you were saying, Albert, he just could not believe this was going to happen. Like, why on earth would you go to Bolton? It doesn't make any sense. And me and him must have been on the phone for about 4 hours. As soon as I left work, I rang him, and I was on the train, I was talking to him, walking home, I was talking to him, got back to my flat, I was talking to him. And at the end, he was like, he can't, can he? He's not going to do it. And by the end of the call, it was like, I can't believe he's doing it. Like, we were so gutted. Mm. And I think it was also a little bit of Palace-y, like, you know, like when Bruce left us when we were top of the league, it's like, we're finally good again, and now you're leaving. It's just like, can we just have a season of being good for a season?
Yeah, we've got to be the only team in the history that's twice had to put a new manager in place when you're challenging for the top, for challenging for the title, which it just never happens. They refer to that in the documentary, which isn't it? It just never happens. And you say, I mean, there's quite a couple of classic bits in there. Wilf just sitting on his chair going, just, he left us. Like, he left us. I can't believe it. And Mark Bright saying, you know, Steve Parish phoned me, said, I'm looking for a new manager, mate. And he was like, what? He's like, yeah, he's going Bolton. What? He's going Bolton? What? just made zero sense. But, you know, Freeman, again, he talks about it a lot when, you just have to go back and listen to our pod. Look in our recent socials. We re-released the pod from 2016 recently. And Freeman said it a lot there. He says it on this, tarnished myself. Knew and made the wrong decision immediately. I think he doesn't say it in the documentary, but I think on the podcast he mentions that he was crying in the car on the way up to Bolton. Like, he just kind of knew in the car. So, and again, it all
he'd left his wallet. He'd left his wallet at the training ground.
It does all ring like that. There's something just underneath the surface that we don't know about. There's something there there's a missing piece to this jigsaw puzzle, which, considering this whole documentary is based around piecing together a jigsaw puzzle, we're missing a key piece, it would seem.
What? Just whilst we're on the subject of Dougie, where's he sitting when they're doing the interview?
He's in the 2010 lounge, I think.
But he's not on a chair. He's like all the chairs have been cleared away. He's had to perch on a step.
I think he's sitting on the arm of a bench. So there is a bench under his feet. So you see it really early in episode one. You see his legs up on a bench, like a cushioned bench, and he's sitting on the arm of it. God knows why. Chair.
I reckon it's penance. Like, we can have you sitting in a chair, mate, if you want. Everyone else is doing it. No, I deserve this. I'm going to kneel on the corner of a bench. So we have to forgive him because that can't be comfortable.
Sorry to bring the set into the conversation, but I just can't help it.
What would you have done differently?
I like Sam's sort of penance idea. I'd have made him lying on a bed of nails.
Aerial shot.
So this moves us into part three, just titled Episode Ollie. And this is kind of where the documentary really comes from. You get this understanding. I don't think they mention it in the documentary, but I read an article on the Palace site since where the documentary is made by effectively a guy who works for Steve Parish's company called Smoke and Mirrors, which I've always found to be an interesting name for a subsidiary, which some of Palace's money goes through. Seems very, very shady. But yeah, he works there. He, you know, approaches Steve Parish and says, look, can I come and do a one-off interview with you? We want to make a sports, just, you know, a sports interview effectively. And they go there, and it just so happens to be the day that Ian Holloway first turns up at Selhurst Park for, I think it's the Blackburn game, isn't it, when he's in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And they just decide, they, you know, see the footage and think, you know, we should follow Holloway's journey here. And that's basically where the documentary is born out of. But then we get, so we get a couple of decent bits of, looking back at it now, it's kind of funny. Sean Dyche is one we speak to, who was out of contract at this point, but then he goes to Burnley to replace Eddie Howe, who chose effectively to go to Burnley over us. But you also get Ian Holloway actually decided to join Ipswich over us. And at this point, we get some really shoddy Bristolian accents. That's good.
I actually had no idea about that. I think that's the first time I've ever heard that, the Ipswich story. Mm.
But what did you make of Steve Parish's accent?
Well, I thought I was going to set myself up and say I reckon I can do a decent Bristolian accent, but I'm not going to. So I don't think I can slag him off too much.
I like to say I don't want you to think like you're the last girl on the dance floor. I wanted to come here, but he was just offering me so much money, I couldn't turn it down. But of course, they go for Mick McCarthy, so Holloway comes through the door, and he's on the bench. Not at the point, he's on the bench. He's in the stands after spending the night with Steve Browett. Now that Blackburn game, Hesketh, I don't know how much you remember of it, but I just remember it being an amazing performance. So much so that I was moved to go and wait outside where the players come out after to tell Mile Jednak just how fucking amazing I thought he was. And I pinned him for about 3 minutes, just telling him how it's one of the best performances, solo, individual performances I've ever seen. He took it very well.
a real shame that didn't make the cut, to be honest. I'd like to see. I do remember that game, because just before it, we'd beaten Leicester away, where I think they talked about basically the players were managing themselves, and that was a brilliant performance, a great away day. But yeah, that Blackburn game, we just absolutely, it might only have been 2-0, but I just remember us absolutely annihilating them. And you must be thinking, if you're Holloway, like, what have I managed to like stumble onto here? You know, you're not usually, if you're coming in mid-season, it's because the team's, you know, shooting down the table. And yet he's seeing this team basically just batter everyone in front of us. So, I think he lucked out a little bit there.
Well, do you remember what he said when he came on the pitch at half time?
Go on.
And I am not going to do the accent. ear boy. He said something like, how good are this lot, talking about the team? And then he said something, and this isn't verbatim, he said something along the lines of, I haven't got to change anything. How good are this lot? I ain't got to change anything. And then episode three, it's all about how we tried to change everything.
Well, I think, initially just made some slight tweaks, which did make us much better. And, you know, his first game in charge, we win 5-0 against Ipswich at home. We absolutely smashed them off the park. And now we know, of course, that, you know, McCarthy had got the job over him at Ipswich, so for him then to immediately just absolutely hammer Mick McCarthy into oblivion is quite amusing, and must have had the Ipswich owners sitting on the side going, oh shit, what have we done? What have we done here? In another world, they end up with Holloway and we end up with Mick McCarthy somehow, I guess, but there you go. And then we get into, you know, we fly through a bunch of games, but I just briefly want to touch on Peterborough away, Heskey. We've droned on enough about this game, but we're just one of the greatest Palace away days. We were obviously top of the league when we beat Ipswich 5-0, but with the way results were going when we were playing Peterborough, it meant we needed to win the game to stay top, and that was just what an atmosphere that day.
It was the best. I mean, certainly top five away games I've ever been to. You wouldn't think it Peterborough away, but like being on the terrace, getting two late goals, both good goals as well. But I just remember the KG one where Wilf's obviously sprinting out from their corner and you just see KG thundering down the pitch, like absolutely hammering it down the pitch. Great finish. And then everyone just, you know, I don't really remember what happened after that because I ended up about 20 rows further forward, I think, by the end of it.
No rows as it was then because it was terraced, wasn't it? So, yeah, but that's probably what added to it, the brilliance of it.
Definitely didn't end up with all my mates who were scattered about, you know, halfway across the stand. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, watching highlights of that period, that sort of month of the season, will never get old because we were just so good. We were so fun to watch.
Yeah, and there's nothing quite like singing "We're Crystal Palace, we're top of the league." It was beautiful. Not many times in for me, I just missed 94 season. I started going in 95, 96. So when we, you know, 92, was it 92, 93? We won the championship. 93, 94. Yeah, I missed that. So for me, it was like one of the first times I actually got to sing that.
Turned up when we were champions, eh?
No, two seasons later. My first season was a season after we got relegated from the Premier League. So, yeah.
Sorry.
As the first season, I sang out. My first actual game was when we beat Arsenal at Highbury 2-1. But we've talked about that enough in the past as well. But getting interested about KG never spoke much. You could go months without speaking to him. And then he'd come out with something really poignant, Albert. What do you reckon? Being friends with KG on Facebook, I find it hard to believe that he comes out of anything poignant, to be honest.
Like Vinnie Jones in Gone in 60 Seconds. Sorry, did you say you're friends with KG on Facebook?
Yeah, like he just went through this phase of just like accepting loads of Palace fans, but now he's like, his Facebook is just unreal. It's just really, really inappropriate memes all of the time.
Oh my goodness. Well, there you go. Doesn't say a lot, but comes out with stuff of poignance.
Indeed. It does at one point there, and again, they're talking a lot about, you know, how all together the club is, and they talk about that for the Christmas party, they go to Paddy McCarthy's hometown, and you get a lovely picture, Albert, of KG and Johnny Esther in Christmas jumpers and Christmas hats.
KG and some small boy.
Are you talking about his Facebook memes? And obviously at this point, this is when Wilfried Zaha signs for your missus's team, Albert. What was the banter like in the house back then?
I can't remember, to be honest. There was not much talking in those days.
Carry on.
No, tell her, we were married.
I know he's there just figuring it out. Like, we can see him on the screen here. He's just like, no, we were married.
I got my days mixed up. Like Zaha going to United was, it was bittersweet. Again, they say it in the documentary, you know, when... I think it's Browett, you know, he says when Alex Ferguson / Man United come in and want one of your, one of your standout players at the time, it's, you have to manage it and at the same time, you don't want to deny him the chance. And again, just talking about Wilf in general, you know, he still comes in for a lot of unwarranted stick these days and people question his attitude, his pitch, whatever, but the way he talks about the club and, you know, and he says it was my idea that I wanted to stay and finish the season because we'd started something and it felt good and it would have been great for the area, and it's, you know, you forget he literally grew up three or four roads away from the ground, which they referred to in an earlier episode, you know, to for him, and again, still at a young age, to sort of have that sort of responsibility and not just be like, see you later, I'm going to United, all the best sort of thing. Like, just goes to show again, another Palace man through and through. No matter what happens, no matter if he ever leaves, just to hear him talk passionately about the club is heartwarming. And yeah, at the time it was, I don't think anybody begrudge him the move. I didn't, certainly when we got to keep him for the 6 months. It's weird. It feels weird saying it, but it's a shame it didn't work out better for him, because it's great for us. Don't get me wrong, but you know, if the Ferguson retirement is a year later, maybe, or 18 months later, and he gets to develop more under Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, he might have hit closer to Ronaldo levels. You know,
you never know. Huge. I've said it a few times. There's sliding doors moments all over the place, aren't there? Here. We then get Kevin Phillips come through the door. Ravishing haircut. I could, like...
Well, this, yes, hair, the smashing new barnet. I mean,
has he gone to Turkey, or is that just he's always just had the hair, he just didn't grow it? It was... But yeah, and then, you know, scores a cracking goal at Watford. We have a slight blip where over the Christmas period, we don't really pick up we get some poor results. I think we lose at Cardiff. But we come back for 2-0 down at Watford with Kevin Phillips scoring an absolutely astonishing finish at the back post.
That was it. That was a really good away day as well.
And then we get back into a really good run of results in the early part of the new year, and particularly the Middlesbrough win at home. I think we beat them 4-1 at home. Zaha was just outstanding that day. Glenn Murray scoring from 25 yards of his left peg. Hull at home, you know, just really, you know, putting away teams that are challenging at the top of the division, like scoring four past them, just became a feature. And then Glenn Murray nicks onto the 30 goals mark, but then it all goes horribly wrong, and it starts Hesketh with St. Patrick's Day at Brighton.
Oh, I was in the first row.
This is his element. I've thrown this question to Hesketh because he really loved that day.
Obviously, this is my favourite bit of the documentary. I was in the first row, and it was pouring with rain. I got absolutely drenched. We were pretty near the corner, so we were near the Brighton fans. It was just a miserable day all in. I was really.
I want to see an Amazon Prime documentary about this specifically. Why was nobody following you with a camera? I know
it would have. I think 99% would have been censored or bleeped. I remember being really pissed off on the train home because Holloway said, I can't remember what he said, but he said something that made me think he didn't take it as seriously. And obviously, we know how it turns out, so it's all water under the bridge. But yeah, I was really annoyed.
It's not, though. By the sounds of it.
Here's the thing. What really pissed me off was we had a photo, and they had a picture of the seagull mascot, whatever it's called. And I was doing like a wanker sign to it, not realizing that the angle that my mate was taking the photo, it looks like I'm wanking off a seagull. That just made my day worse.
Is that
perch on your shoulder?
I mean, you're right. At the time, there was a lot of Holloway's understanding of the rivalry was really called into question. And he had to come out swinging, really, and was like, started talking about, I don't know about the Palace-Brighton rivalry, but I do know about it now. He goes, but trust me, I know enough about the Bristol Rovers-Bristol City rivalry to know if that's what it means to you guys, and I understand, and I can sort of transfer that understanding from my City Rovers hatred to sort of channel it towards that. And of course, as you say, we all know it ends up. But it would have been fine if we bounced back the following game at home to Birmingham, Albert, but... Oh my goodness, that was a bad, bad evening.
That was a dark, dark, I think that was one of the last midweek games I ever went to. yeah, was it? Again, you watch it back and you think, oh yeah, Christ, that was Nathan Redmond and Ravel Morrison.
Yeah.
And yeah, I, I didn't enjoy reminiscing about that bit. I remember that, and that was just grim. I remember coming out of that game. In fact, I think there's a post-match interview with a fan on the street who's, you know, just looks pretty shell-shocked. And I remember feeling the same at the time. It was like, what is going on? Seven goals, two games, yeah, without any sort of, and not, and you couldn't say, oh, it was unlucky, or, you know, oh, well, you know, we should have got a point really on another day. Like, we were, it was just, well, dross.
Yeah. As Zaha says about the Brighton game, it was like a training exercise for them, and then it was not much different at Birmingham. I think that fan outside the stadium sums it up greatly. It was just, on this form, we're not going to make the playoffs. And this is when you start getting, you know, the players talking about having their meetings behind Holloway's back, and Steve Parish then being involved in said meetings. And you could...
How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Both Friedman and Holloway, as managers, at various points talk about... So Friedman mentions he doesn't like that the conversation takes place in the car park. He feels he should have come and talked to him. And Holloway says exactly the same thing. Like, he doesn't like that Steve Parish is talking to him. But as Holloway says, you know, people have different ways of running things, and they do it different things. And whilst Parish does seem to have this awareness that I know I probably shouldn't get involved, I think the times he's done it throughout his Palace ownership, he's done it at the right times. And he has actually picked the moments out to say, you know, for purpose of this documentary, as we're talking about this one, he says it was our time. It had to be our time. We all know that if we didn't get promoted that season, we were going to lose Zaha. The team was probably going to get dismantled. So it had to be this time. He didn't want to miss that moment. So that's why he got involved in the conversations. And, you know, Ian Holloway deep down must understand it, because he puts his hand up and says, yeah, right, fair enough. I've taken it too far. We'll go back to doing what we do best. And that's basically where this episode ends, is where it's, you know, him just, you know, saying, yeah, okay, let's get back to the Freeman way. Even though I think, was it Peter Ramage talks about the ghost of Dougie Friedman hanging over him, and yeah,
it's not dead,
but it feels like Holloway talks a lot about being proud of the job he done at Palace and so on, as we'll get into when we do another pod on this on episodes 4 and 5. But you feel like he's still not quite fully comfortable with what went on at Palace around him, and he still feels slighted by it all. But so there we are. So the first three episodes, Albert, you can give us an overview of these, because you haven't seen 4 and 5. So me and no spoilers, but me and Hesketh know what comes next. But yeah, but how you feeling about them so far? What's your general overview?
Yeah, I like it. It's I mean, obviously, as a Palace fan, you're well into it, and there's some, you know, really, as we've alluded to, there's some very welcome faces looking back at you, and just reminds you that we were lucky to have such great individuals at the club. And like I say, that there is that real band of misfits sort of thing, and everybody loves a bit of an underdog story. And yeah, and I think it's really well put together. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd enjoy it anyway near as much if I wasn't a Palace fan, but I guess that's kind of the point. It feels on a different level to the big, you know, the big glossy sort of Man City and Tottenham, you know, prime series, which, you know, the Spurs one's good, but the City one's just a big puff piece, you know, for the club. You know, there's a story here, and you know, after episode 3, we're not even halfway through that story, really. So yeah, I mean, obviously we know what happens, know what's going to happen in 4 and 5, but don't necessarily know the intricate ins and outs. And you know, Poogate, surely there's going to be some massive revelations about Poogate. But yeah, no, I think it's great, and I would recommend on Palace fans watch it, because I think it's quite heartwarming. You know, it's still a big sort of football story. You know, we're not talking about some working man's team that are, you know, like trying to, you know, make it as professionals. They are professional footballers, but it's just I think there's a real insight into the mentality of players, and I think you really get an insight into how players react when they come up with certainly unexpected adversity, such as your manager that's taking you to the top of the league walking out on you. You know, it is interesting to hear them sort of speak on that. I'm enjoying it.
And I get the impression from, you know, the tweets, Heskey, if you've probably seen a few of these as well, in terms of neutrals are appearing to love it as well. I've seen many people say, like you've just alluded to there, Albert, it's much better than the City one, it's better than the Spurs one. It's actually, you know, telling a story, a proper footballing story, which a lot more fans can relate to. And, yeah, it seems to be well taken in by the neutral as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, proper football fans will like stories about good team spirit and, you know, getting the crowd behind the team and all working together and stuff. And obviously we're biased because we're Palace, but that was the thing that we loved the most about this team. You know, obviously the success was great and we did have some flair, but just the way they all sort of backed each other, which you could tell by watching them, you know, obviously it's great to hear them talk about it, but you could tell by watching them at the time that the camaraderie and the team spirit was so good. And I think that resonates with a lot of football fans, whether they're Palace or not. So, yeah, it's great to see fans from all over the place saying how much they enjoyed it, because I think it's a really worthy documentary of watching.
So next up, we're going to be talking episodes 4 and 5 in the next pod. Now, I don't know how I'm going to do this yet. We're either going to do episodes 4 and 5 and then another pod with a couple of special guests, or we'll do episodes 4 and 5 with a special guest. I don't know which way round it's going to be yet. Albert's looking at me like, 2 more pods? But no, so, I mean, I've already watched episode 4 3 times and I cried on every occasion. So, Albert, you've got that to look forward to. It's just, you know, if you've enjoyed episodes 1 through 3, 4 and 5 are just basically masterpieces in terms of what you'd want from Crystal Palace content.
I'll have a box of tissues ready.
Is that because Heskey's got a seagull near him again? Right, so... yep, thanks for listening. Look out for part 2 of this. And if you haven't watched it yet, what you're doing, go to Amazon Prime, When Eagle's There, which really annoyingly you have to search for. It's not just on any homepage anywhere, which is very frustrating. But yeah, When Eagle's There on Amazon Prime, and we'll be back shortly with round 2.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.